Taking a look now at the history of Wisconsin Public Radio with Randall Davidson of Wisconsin Public Radio, of course, you hear him all the time. He's the author of 9XM Talking, WHA Radio and the Wisconsin Idea, published by Terrace Books, University of Wisconsin Press. And he's been with us a couple times, but we've always had a lot of fun. And so we've asked him back to reminisce a little bit more and certainly to answer your questions as well as we move along here today. Maybe you've got a remembrance or a question about shows that have aired on the network or on WHA. Feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. Randall, welcome back.
Nice to be here.
Where did you do your research for most of this book?
The bulk of it was done here in Madison, a couple of locations, the University Archives, which is in the Steenbach Library on the west end of campus. They hold the a lot of the paper records for WHA Radio and Television. The State Historical Society's Archives Division was very useful because the papers of two of the big names of the past from WHA's history, Harold McCarty and Harold Engel, are held there, as are the papers of some early light, well-known folks, Malcolm Hansen, one of our first announcers, his papers are there, and the papers of John Stanley Penn, who wrote a dissertation on the history of WHA back in 1959. His papers are preserved there. So those were the two main places I worked. I also did a lot of work on looking at old newspapers on microfilm at the Historical Society, primarily the Stevens Point Daily Journal for all my information about WLBL. That was a lot of fun. And then a few other little places. The UW Stevens Point Library had a file that I could use. I actually got into the WLBL transmitter building where some very interesting early records were preserved and was able to scan those and search through those as well. But most of it was done here in Madison, evenings and weekends and doing what I can.
Tell us the scope of the book. It starts right at the beginning.
At the very first experiments with wireless telegraphy on the UW campus in the early years of the 20th century, the first experiments was sending out a broadcast telegraphically and then into sound broadcasting 1917, 1918, 1919, and then about to the time that we started calling ourselves Wisconsin Public Radio. It comes up to the end of 1978, and that's pretty much the scope of the book. There's a little bit on the post-78 stuff just so people can have a sense of where we are today, but most of the book is about the years before 1979.
But that takes in...
It's a lot.
That takes in a lot.
Yep.
That's for sure. Well, if you were going to pick a person or a person, I guess McCarty and...
McCarty was an important person in the history of the place. The founder of the station, Earl Terry, was kind of a humble fellow, and a lot of his contributions got lost in the shuffle in later years as we became a little more savvy with publicity, too, in the years starting in the 1930s. But Earl Terry built the station and nurtured it through the early years where there was no money available, and it wasn't really understood yet what value radio could have for the university. He worked to improve the station's standing on campus with the other professors and try to get a better deal for frequencies. We were sharing our frequency with commercial stations for a lot of the 1920s. And so he made an important contribution. Harold McCarty, though, a theater student who got hired to be the noontime announcer. He was the announcer of this program. He was in 1929, 1930, and got hooked on radio and shortly became chief announcer and then program director and then station manager. And he was here till 1966 and built the FM network, was instrumental in building the statewide network of FM stations. Another very important person.
Wow. How many people back in some of those early days, how many people actually worked at Wisconsin Public Radio?
In the earliest days, there were two, three. There were half a dozen when we were telegraphic in 1916. There were half a dozen students. They called themselves, they were known on campus as the Wireless Squad. And they were engineering students who learned how to do wireless telegraphy and to build equipment. And they kind of were their own little club. And then Terry was the manager of the station. He held the license, specified him as the manager. And in later years, it was himself, and Malcolm Hansen was the chief operator. He was a student. And then William Lighty got involved. He was a professor in the Extension Division. And he was really the program director. He was the guy that, pestered professors to come on the air and and would barge into faculty meetings and bother people and say, you really should come on the radio and do a little talk for us. And so there were, you know, three or four people. And then the agriculture college got involved with Andrew Hopkins. And so bit by bit, there were people that had had radios part of their their weekly duties, but there were really only two or three people that were working at the station proper.
Your book highlights several sort of great programs: Wisconsin School of the Air, a College of the Air, the Homemakers Program, the Farm Program, Chapter a Day. Tell us a little bit about. Let's take Wisconsin School of the Air.
Well, there was a move in the late 20s to use radio for educational purposes for schools. And the big, some of the big city stations, WMAQ in Chicago was one, but the radio network, CBS and NBC, had network radio shows that were designed to be used by students in schools, schoolrooms. And Harold McCarty was very impressed by this, and he thought that we should do this at in Wisconsin. At the time, it was just WHA Madison. There was no FM network. He was planning just for WHA in Madison, and he made the announcement in late summer 1931. He'd been down to Chicago and visited WMAQ, and the Ohio station at Columbus at Ohio State was also doing something along this line, the Ohio School of the Air. And he came back from vacation in the late summer, and he said, we're going to have a Wisconsin School of the Air, and it's going to start in October. And they launched it with just put it together out of whole cloth, and it got on the air in October of 1931. 10 programs, one each morning during the week and one in the afternoon, about 20 minutes in length. And some of the programs that were on that first week lasted for decades. There was the singing program with Pop Gordon. Journeys in Musicland. There was the Friday morning program for the littlest children, the kindergartners, Rhythm and Games with Fanny Steve. These programs debuted right at the beginning, and they were around for a very long time. And it served the station on a couple levels. It the need to produce these programs, we assembled script writers and people like that. And so they were available for other productions at the station, too. But it politically made the station something that had value. So when legislators would ask, why should we be funding this? They could point to the thousands of students in one-room schoolhouses all over the state that were listening to these programs. Mm-hmm. That was – it had political value and on more than one occasion saved the station from being defunded. McCarty says that overtly, that was one of the values of the operation.
Randall Davidson, our guest from Wisconsin Public Radio, author of 9XM Talking, WHA Radio and the Wisconsin Idea. It's published by Terrace Books, the University of Wisconsin Press. Give us a call if you have a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments or remembrances. We'll love to hear from you. Well, Rhythm, what was it? I want to say
Rhythm and Games.
Rhythm and Games. Yeah. I wanted to say Rhythm and Booms.
Yes.
After a fireworks display that happens here in Madison and the Madison area every year. But Rhythm and Games, what was that like?
That was a program that really for the youngest school children, kindergarten through third grade. And it was to teach kids, self-confidence and to safety rules and how to play well with each other and things like that. A woman named Fanny Steve, who was from the Madison Public Schools, came in and she'd play the piano and have the children do things along with on the radio. There's a teacher's guide that came with it. And she started working in 1931, the first week, and she was 55 years old when she started working for the show. And she hung on till she was 90. She retired in 1966.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
She holds the record as the person who was the continuous record for teaching on the Wisconsin School of the Air. And she'd won many awards by the time she retired. There were some awards she'd won for educational programming and things like that. But she wasn't – I have a photo of her in the book from about the middle of her time with us, from about 1949, 1950. But there's a very – I found a very nice photo of her standing next to her big – she had a big Plymouth with big fins on it that she had parked in front of Radio Hall.
Oh, great story. Janice in Whitefish Bay will give you a chance. Hi.
Hi. I vaguely remember that school for the air. I was born in 31. Well, anyway, I remember hearing about it. I want to ask about Esther Houghton. and Carol Cowan.
Sure.
And Esther Hotton, I know, did a woman's program or something, whatever. Tell me what happened to those ladies.
Well, Carol Cowan was here when I started, and she
was
a reader for Chapter a Day, and mm-hmm. she'd done stuff for University of the Air. She was the producer of the University of the Air when we were still doing long-form lectures.
Okay.
And
she filled in for me for the year that I was in Trinidad and did a wonderful job hosting this program.
Okay, but now that you raise that University of the Air, what happened to that?
The University of the Air is still on the air. Norman Gilliland runs it now, and it's on Sundays. It's a one-hour show.
No, I do listen to that, but I missed the lectures that you had.
Yeah, the lectures. They were here when I started in 1990. Uh-huh. We were still doing them. They kind of went away. The time slot where we had them is now occupied by Talk of the Nation.
Oh, I see.
And but the need to do things like that, you know, there's other ways to get that kind of material out. There's still distance learning on Wisconsin Public Television, and there's other ways to get distance learning. So, but yeah, we were doing classroom lectures. I think till 1991 probably was when they stopped doing that.
I was kind of amused that one of the comments, we had a little listener-focused session with some people, and one of the guys chuckling a little bit at saying, you know, that professor that we're still hearing has been dead for 3 years. But we had those recorded, and he was very, very good, and so we kept him on. Well, I tell you what, we'll talk about Esther Holton, and we'll talk about Carol Cowan. We need to take a look at the news and the weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And then we'll be back. And you want to do those duties while you're at it, too? We'll have Randall Davidson take care of those duties as well here. And just to let you know that coming up later this afternoon, we'll be hearing, where are we going to go next? Here at 1 o'clock, Talk of the Nation. And at Talk of the Nation, we'll hear views on the war in Iraq from veterans who've served in a conversation with New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson. That's coming up. Talking about the history of Wisconsin Public Radio today with Randall Davidson, who has authored 9XM Talking, WHA Radio and the Wisconsin Idea, published by Terrace Books, University of Wisconsin Press. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Randall, as we broke for news, a caller asked about Esther Hotton.
Yeah, Esther also, I have her in the book too, just as I have her down as a Chapter a Day reader. She was one of the two dozen or so people that have read for Chapter a Day. And also one more thing about Carol Cowan. She was producing here the Wisconsin School of the Air after it had gone off the air. It was no longer produced for broadcast, but we were still producing tapes for use in schools. And she pulled me into the studio one day. She needed a male voice to read an introduction. And that's my only participation in the Wisconsin. I did Book Trails, the introduction for a couple episodes of Book Trails. And that's my only Wisconsin School of the Air participation, except for being a member of one of the classes when I was in sixth grade. I sang along with Let's Sing when I was growing up in Nina.
Oh, good enough. Well, I tell you what, we've got a little piece of Ken Ost.
Mm-hmm.
And let's listen to Ken. Maybe we'll listen to Ken. Well, I had this.
Not playing. Well, that's interesting.
Not playing. Well, wait a minute. You know what? I pressed the wrong button. Let's try this one.
Okay.
Good morning. This is WHA-FM in Madison. Good morning. This is WHA, the University of Wisconsin station in Madison. At this time, the Wisconsin State Broadcasting Service begins operating from studios in Radio Hall on the University of Wisconsin campus. Transmitters are located at Delafield, Chilton, Rib Mountain State Park, Auburndale, Brewell, Colfax, West Salem, Highland, and Madison.
Pretty good. That's from probably the late 50s. And, of course, we signed on, then we played marching music.
And that's how we started.
That's how we started the broadcast day. We had the bandwagon school, the bandwagon program, which was on for decades. And that's how, before there was such a thing as morning edition, that's what we did for the early morning, get people going, play a lot of marches.
Leonard in Brownsville will give you a chance now. Hi, Len.
Hello there. Randall, Are you familiar with Ranger Mac?
Sure, very much so.
Could you tell me, did the Wisconsin School of the Air record any of his programs that he put on Wisconsin School of the Air back in the 40s?
Sure, lots of them. There's a fairly large collection of material for Ranger Mac. His papers are held by the State Historical Society. And
okay.
A couple summers ago, I was kind of commissioned by them to go through their WHA collection. And so I took a week of vacation and went over there and sorted through this material. And we kind of parceled it out to different archives, but the Ranger Mac stuff is preserved there. There's quite a few programs that he pre-recorded, and so they do exist. Going back to about 1936, 37, and then, of course, they were on big transcription records, big 16-inch platters.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then later on, we moved to tape, and I think they go right up to when he retired in the mid-50s. So there's quite a few. There's quite a few that are preserved. I do have audio of some, you know, some few little chunks here and there. And he was on starting in 33. He'd been on with us as a guest way back in the 20s because he was in charge of the 4-H and was in the state, and it was a forester by training. And had been a school teacher and principal and things like that. But he had this show, this conservation show called The Field with Ranger Mac, ran on the state network for years. And in the first couple of years, it was just one of the shows. But then in 1935, the state passed a law saying that all schools have to offer conservation education. And many schools were completely stumped as to how they were going to do this. And then here's this nice radio program just sitting there ready to go.
Yep.
And it was very popular. In fact, there was a survey done in the 40s of the School of the Air, an actual academic survey. And the people that did the survey were so impressed with Ranger Mac. His real name was Wakelin McNeil.
Yes, that's right.
His presentation style and the connection he seemed to foster with the students on the radio, and just the loyalty and the passion that the students felt for this program was amazing. He'd get letters, and he'd get... Students would insist that their schools build conservation corners in their classrooms.
Yep.
And he had a project where he had students plant trees.
He thought
this was a great deal to kind of reforest the state.
Oh, yeah.
And he always said if someone plants a tree, they're always going to protect trees. A tree planter is a tree protector, was his quote. And by the mid-40s, the students listening to the show had planted 7 million trees in Wisconsin.
Goodness.
So he was a very important part of the programming, and when he retired, Bob Ellerson took over the program.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And then when Bob Ellerson stepped down, Scott Craven, regular guest here, took over the last few seasons of the Over the Air School of the Air. Was Scott Craven hosting the program.
Well, so you're talking to one of the tree planters.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, I during the summer months he used to come up to northern Wisconsin. Where I was growing up, and 4-H camps up there at that time at Pigeon Lake, and I forget what the other one was near Mellon. There was a camp there too, where he used to come and be one of the guest speakers and a camp counselor, and he'd always have a morning bird listening session for those that were interested, and there were always about 10 of us that used to go out, and he was just a wonderful teacher. He asked for descriptions of the birds and so forth, you know, and it's certainly how I became interested in conservation.
Yeah.
He was a very interesting person. Now, I'm going to look up and see if I can get some of those recordings. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
You've filled in a lot of information I've been wondering about for a long time.
Yeah, I couldn't ignore him. He was such an important person in the history of the place. And if you have access to the Wisconsin Magazine of History, which I also believe is online now, the State Historical Society publishes a quarterly publication. They did a beautiful cover story on Ranger Mac a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And it was really, really well done. And that might be something you might want to look up, too. It has a lot of information, a lot of they have photos of the of the letters, and with the beautiful colors, kids would color in and little pine cones and stuff. It's just a beautiful piece of work, so you might want to check that out, too.
Thanks a lot, Len, for calling. Appreciate it. Jerry and Prairie du Chien, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a question and then one memory.
Sure.
Back in 1957, when I was in St. Adalbert's grade school up in Superior, Wisconsin, on Friday afternoon, my recall is that Sister Morris would turn on the FM radio, which was in our classroom, and we would listen to some public radio program, and I think we also participated in it, but I have no idea what that program was.
Well, it could have been
school. It was probably school of the air. If this was in grade school, there were. I'd have to go get the schedule grids because the program schedule changed every year. I mean, there were some things that were standard there. You know, Wednesday afternoon was always the singing program. Friday morning was always, you know, rhythm and games. But then we kind of filled in different things, kind of here and there. I'm going to look at the book here quick and just see if I
your own book.
I do have the 1954-55 School of the Air bulletin. It probably was, Friday afternoons in the mid-50s was Book Trails. So it might have been a show, you know, kind of looking at literature and, you know, dramatizing famous books. Okay. Book Trails is the one that lasted right up to the very end. It's one of the handful of shows that lasted right through the mid-90s.
Okay, now I'm wondering if it was really the Wednesday afternoon program that had to do with music, but
that's the one I sang along with.
Yeah, me too.
They'd turn on the FM radio in the principal's office and pipe it into the sixth grade classroom, and we'd sing along with. Well, you would have had in 57. It would have been William Wooldridge.
Okay.
Or Warren Wooldridge, rather. And,
well, thank you for
his wife.
Jog of my
sure.
memory.
Sure.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for calling. Milton in West Allis, it's your turn. Hi, Milton.
Hi. I'd like to say thank you to both of you. I think the hours that Randall is a guest on Wisconsin Public Radio are some of the finest that are presented.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And I hope that someday that we'll be able to again have the kind of tying together that Wisconsin Public Radio used to give to children in the state. And, okay, Randall, the Milwaukee County Public Library System does not seem to have a copy of your book. And I hope that if any Milwaukee County Public Library employees are listening right now, that they will hasten to correct the situation. And I wanted to ask if there's going to be a paperback edition.
That's kind of up to the publisher. From what I understand, I'm not, I'm not privy to what goes on. Depends on how fast it sells as a hardcover book will determine whether or not they do another run in hardcover. If they do, that will, as soon as they burn through the ones that they've already printed, they'll do another run, probably the same size. Then there'll be a paperback edition, which I will probably have to add an update or a couple things to. We have a new station that just went on the air earlier this month.
Mm-hmm.
We've added a new station in southwestern Wisconsin for the NPR News and Classical Music Network, WSSW, at 89.1. That went on the air February 1st. So I want to add that there and a few other little odds and ends once it goes to paperback, they'll let me make a few little additions
changes.
If I want.
Yeah.
But yeah, it will be in paperback eventually. I don't know how soon. It's a function of how fast it sells.
Thanks, Mel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling.
I want to just add also what he mentioned about tying the state together for school kids. Mm-hmm. That was one thing that the School of the Air they pointed to as a value of it. Students who felt tremendously isolated, particularly in rural schools in the early years, there were 6,600 one-room schoolhouses in Wisconsin mm-hmm. in 1931 when we started doing this. And in one of the art programs we had on the air, the radio teacher mentioned a football game. And we think today, you know, football is ubiquitous. Everybody knows what mm-hmm. that's about. In this one school, the teacher wrote in to say that only one student in the classroom had ever even seen even kids play football. When they mentioned mm-hmm. it on the radio, it was kind of a complaint that, you know, really not everybody knows what football is. So it was, you're right, it was a way of tying people together. Students felt less isolated. They felt like they were part of something bigger. And I think there's a school of thought that Wisconsinites are a little more sensitive to conservation issues than other states' residents are because of Ranger Mac. So many people in Wisconsin took a field with Ranger Mac when they were growing up that it kind of fostered a sense of conservation and environmentalism in them.
Hmm. Very interesting. Milton, thanks again. Arliss in, let's see, Ontagonon?
No, Upper Peninsula.
Oh, the UP.
Yes.
All right.
Very good.
Hello.
Hi there.
I, I want to call to tell you that I'm forever grateful to your Wisconsin Public Radio because in the early 60s, I listened to Roy Vogelman on Views of the News every day. Mm-hmm. He would read editorials from around our country and Canada and overseas, and it alerted me, finally, real early, to the shenanigans in Southeast Asia, what our country was doing. And it's forever alerted me to the fact that if we have an informed citizenry who know and are interested in what's going on in the world, we won't have tragedies like Vietnam or the present Iraq war. And I wonder if Roy Vogelman is honored in somewhere in your Wisconsin Public Radio archives.
Sure.
Absolutely.
He's in the book. He was our first news director. He'd been a news editor prior to that. We hadn't really had an official person in charge of news in the early days. But he'd been chief announcer at one point, and then he became news editor. And then they decided to make news director a position. And they told him he had to do one or the other. He couldn't be chief announcer and news director. So he became news director. I have a photo of him shortly after he was made news director, very young Roy Vogelman standing next to our United Press teletype in Radio Hall. And, Views of the News was a program that Roy developed where he read editorials from different publications and a wide range of publications.
Yes.
You'd hear, from the Christian Science Monitor and from the Wall Street Journal and the Chicago Tribune and the Los Angeles Times. And he would search them out and strive for very even-handed treatment, very even balance, and developed a real following for that. He was news director longer than anybody. We're up to our ninth news director right now, and mm-hmm. He was the first one. He was news director for 30 years.
Yeah, and did a wonderful job. Yep. He was news director when I came on board, I believe. Mm-hmm.
He was news director till 1977.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was news director for a long time and learned a lot from him and admired his work.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. John Powell, our former state government reporter, had me duplicate a program that he had done on tape in 1973 for a project. And John, it was interesting, he had been here a year working for Roy, and he kind of sounded like Roy. You kind of emulate the people that are around you when you work in radio. And I said, gee, you sound a lot like Roy Vogelman there, John,
Well, I'd love to hear one of his programs again, if that's possible. Just a synopsis, maybe, of some of his work.
Yeah, we'll have to. I don't have anything. I have a couple things here on hand of Roy. I have him doing a post-mortem kind of sit-down with a couple of political science professors analyzing the 1966 State of the Union address from LBJ.
Oh my gosh.
I inherited that from the Historical Society, and it's in our newsroom right now. It's one of the many, many tapes I kind of rescued. We have our entire coverage of the Kennedy assassination and some early broadcasts of like the liftoff of Apollo 11, things like that, so that I just stumbled on, and they're preserved in my office right now.
Mm. Fine. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it very much. I remember Maury White telling me the story. Maury, who did the farm program all those years, of the first announcement that someone came in while he was doing the show, I believe, mm-hmm. and said the president's been shot. And he said, well, make sure that that's correct.
Right. Yes, that's one of those things that you just do not go on with until you're absolutely sure.
And got that and then turned it over to the news people, I believe.
And someone had the presence of mind to start recording. And I have 36 reels of tape of our entire coverage, most of which was from NBC, which was the network that we had access to NBC here at the network. There wasn't a national public radio then.
Mm-hmm.
And the local NBC affiliate in town, radio, would let us use anything that wasn't a commercial thing. So like the State of the Union,
mm-hmm.
presidential addresses, things like that, we could have access to as long as they weren't a commercial program.
Interesting. Roger in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi. We have a professor at the university now, Emily Auerbach, that does a good job of teaching literature combined with the other arts, music, some architecture, and so forth. And there was a professor, a male on public radio a long time ago, 12 or 15 years ago, who did the same thing, such a great job with it, sort of the change in cultures and the arts with it, or the arts propelling it. I'd really like to know his name and hear some of his stuff again.
Boy, that could have been Professor Herbst, maybe.
Well, maybe so. What do you have a first name?
Jürgen.
Jürgen Herbst.
Herbst. Well, he talked about education and society. That was actually a University of the Air program that was a call-in. We kind of those were our first tries at doing a University of the Air program that was actually kind of interactive.
I don't think that was it because okay. I don't think it was a call-in, and that name doesn't.
There were so many professors that were involved over the years. The ones that people seem to remember are Michael Petrovich with his history of Russia, Norman Cameron, Philo Buck with comparative literature. There have been a bunch of them, and we pretty much pestered every department on campus to get them to take part in this program, and it had been on since the 30s. So there's been a lot of involvement. I'd have to,
I have to look
at the program guides from a specific year to find out who that might be.
Is Marcus Bach? Who is that?
Philo Buck was
Marcus Bach.
Marcus Bach. That one doesn't ring a bell. I'd have to look up there. There have been so many. I just had to do a thumbnail of the more popular ones.
They might have been typed in from out of state too.
That's true. We did carry some from other states. There was UCLA provided a couple shows, and I know the University of Michigan provided one. So, and UW-Milwaukee actually got involved when that station went on the air in the mid-60s.
Hmm. Yeah, some of that stuff can be really interesting, so I hope we hear more of that.
Sure, thank you.
Thanks a lot. And June in Arborvitae, your turn. Hi, June.
Hello. I realize time is short, and I thought maybe he could just tell us a little bit about Dr. Walter Damrosch. Way back when I was in elementary school, we listened to him, I believe, weekly, and he had a program about music, and it was the only thing available in those days for children that had anything to do with classical music, and I always, I can't forget him.
Dr. Damrosch was that was a network commercial network show. That was one we didn't carry, but that was one that the NBC network produced.
And it
was designed to be played in schools.
Okay.
And so, but it was a network program. It was a coast to coast program nationally.
Is that so?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the our programs were kind of tailored after these national shows. Their CBS had the American School of the Air. And there was a famous story there where when Germany invaded Austria, they were kind of short of news reporters because Edward R. Murrow and William R. Shire are all working for an American School of the Air program, and they were kind of busy doing this classroom stuff, and they were kind of short of reporters at the time. So, but those are the big network shows, and that was one of the things that we said at WHA was, well, you're getting this non-commercially. There's no commercial involvement here. We're interested purely in education. We're not interested in ratings. We're not interested in selling a product. Whereas these, then there was some criticism from educators that the national network shows were commercially, were driven by commercial interests.
I don't even remember any commercials at all.
Well, but the networks themselves were, there may not have been commercials in the programs, but some of the, there was concern that it was a commercial network. They were doing it kind of as a public service, but it's still a commercial network. So there was some concern about that, but from educators.
Well, I'll take Wisconsin Public Radio any day.
Thanks, June.
Thank you.
And Sarah in Antioch, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I'll be really quick because I think it's probably a longer answer. But as a younger Illinoisan, I am trying to understand how exactly the school of the University of the Air, whatever, the program you're talking about, how that helped. And because you said in the 30s they had 6,600 one-room schoolhouses. Mm-hmm. How long did the one-room schoolhouses go, and how long did the air go, and
sure.
How did that all work together?
Well, one-room schoolhouses kind of, by the early 60s, had kind of disappeared. There's not too many of them left. I think there's one on Madeline Island still.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea was that these radio programs could be used as, supplemental programming, supplemental teaching for these schools. And as one-room schoolhouses disappeared, the need for these programs in schools, kind of disappeared too, because most bigger schools probably have a music teacher and an art teacher and specialized audiovisual equipment. So we continued to do it on the air till the mid-80s, and then we continued to offer it by tape through the mid-90s.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for calling. And Randall, always a pleasure.
A pleasure for me, too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Randall Davidson of Wisconsin Public Radio, our resident historian and author of 9XM Talking, WHA Radio and the Wisconsin Idea. It's published by Terrace Books, University of Wisconsin Press. And thank you very much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.